This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and the upcoming schedule. Now here's Paul Jay, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
At top of the morning, KBOI News Time, 8:39. Bob Beeler joins us this morning for Bronco Monday on Tuesday. And I tell you what, pretty good debut for Boise State.
Yes, I'd say that they look good, especially offensively. The defensive line, I thought, did a very good job against a good running team. I think we'll still know a little more about the secondary next Saturday or this coming Saturday when they face pass-happy Washington State. Anthony Jennings in the pass attack for Louisiana, really not that stringent. But overall, I thought they played an extremely good game. They got a lot of people some playing time. They, you know, weathered the heat and humidity of Louisiana well. You know, a few guys went out with cramps, but most of them came back during the game.
Yeah, I was particularly impressed with the defensive side of the ball. A lot of hitting going on and some pretty good coverage. And everybody was worried about the running attack of both the running back and the quarterback. They stopped both of them.
Well, it was to me interesting that it reminded me of a couple of games. It reminded me of the bowl game last year where Boise State took the ball, scored quickly, stopped the other team, got the ball back, scored quickly again. And if this was a prize fight, they would have stopped it after it was 14-0. And then it was also reminiscent of the 34-9 win here 2 years ago. Elijah McGuire, who I think is a really good running back, Boise State does very good against conventional running backs. If you're a running back that runs between the tackles or tries to sweep the ends, not option. Boise State's defense over the last few years has been really good. Held him to 31 yards last year, 46 this year. He got 6 catches for 40 yards, but those were checkdowns. They were plays that Boise State's defense basically gave them to take.
Yeah, throw in front of the coverage, stop him short of the first down, happened time after time.
Something that was good, I think, in the game, No turnovers for Boise State. Of course, they didn't force any either.
Well, they didn't need to. Sure. And in this situation, they had the one, but it was called back for a penalty. Good point, Chris. And I think that if you've got a game where you are the superior team, and Boise State was the superior team, if you have a zero turnover game on both sides, it's going to make it harder for the inferior team to win. It's the games where you're maybe even or a little better or a little worse, where the teams are pretty close, the turnovers decide it. But I'd take a game when you're the better team, no turnovers on either side, because they're not going to go the length of the field against you enough times for the short field they'll need.
Yeah, missed the first field goal attempt. I was shocked, and then after that, it was okay.
Yeah, you figure that he's going to miss a couple during the year. We certainly didn't need it.
What, he missed
Saturday.
4 last year?
Yeah, and he missed only 2 inside of 50.
No,
Tyler Ross is one of the better kickers. That was one of those where you kind of look at it and you're watching it. And a lot of times sitting in the press box, you don't have the total angle, especially if it goes above the goalpost, to think, is it good or is it not good? They call that no good. You just kind of look.
It was no good.
But he made the second one, and I think he'll be fine. I mean, if you said areas of concern heading into the season, field goal kicking would not be there.
No, it wouldn't. And, you know, everybody misses one every once in a while.
Yeah, and in this case, didn't really hurt the final score much.
No, and I liked Alexander Madison, the freshman running back who came in, ran hard, looks like a big, powerful guy. So I think we may have a second running back to Jeremy McNichols. They hardly used him at all in the second half.
McNichols is funny, man. He scores 4 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns in like 12 minutes.
Right. Well, I wouldn't have played him in the second half.
No.
And then Rippon, I thought, picked up where he left off. Spurback, they have a lot of weapons. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm up late trying to figure out how to stop him. Wilson gives Boise State another dimension receiving-wise. I thought Danan stepped up with Rowe out because I thought, well, maybe there'd be no tight end that would catch the ball. It'd all be blocking types. Danan's emerged.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked about a lot before the game with Rip is getting rid of the ball quicker, having that quick release, getting rid of it. Don't get hit like he got hit so many times last year. He looked great. He got rid of the ball, you know, like a full count earlier than he did last year.
And the only sack he had was when the ball slipped out of his hands and he kind of had to cover it and they jumped on him. Yep. That went as a sack. And I don't know whether the hand, you know, I could see him, hot a day as it was and humid as it was, his hand was sweaty and the ball may have just popped out.
We mentioned this morning that this weekend his Uncle Mark will be rooting for Uncle Mark's old school, which is Washington State.
Yeah, I think Uncle Mark wants to see a high-scoring game. Brett plays extremely well, but the Cougs prevail. But I think Mark may have it. I think Mark may be the one disappointed at the end of the game. I think Brett's going to have the smile.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. KBOI News Time, 8:43.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on the home of the Broncos, 670 KBOI.
It's 8:46, Paul J. Chris and Bob Beeler. Coach Mike Leach talked a lot about the blue turf, not a lot about the Broncos.
No, I asked him a question or a couple on the conference call.
Some
and,
weird
you know,
stuff.
But, you know, sometimes you get it on a Monday. Maybe they haven't looked that much. He
probably
might have been more
not.
A night game, more worried that his team lost. You know, he might have been looking at his team. But, yeah, I don't think he had – I think if you did that same interview on Thursday, he's going to
sounded unprepared, yeah.
But Boise State's going to have its hands full on the defensive side. Washington State's going to have its hands full on the defensive side. The Cougars 0-1, second year in a row, lose to an FCS school to open the year. 45-42, Eastern Washington, who's usually very good
yes.
in the Big Sky, wins the game. Luke Falk, the quarterback, 41 of 51, completed 80% of his passes for 418. Boise State linebacker Tanner Vallejo on what Falk brings to the Cougars.
That dude, he seems like he's pretty smart. He takes all his reads, pocket passer, great protection, great O-line, and, you know, got to watch a little more film on them, but from what I've seen, he's real good.
And the offense, they don't run the ball much. They ran it for less than 100 yards. That's their plan. They'll spread you out with 4 and 5 receivers and throw some more. Vallejo talked about the air raid offense of Mike Leach and what makes it tough.
There's just so many options for him to throw the ball to, and when you have such a smart quarterback like he is, he can read the defenses, see what defense we're in, and he knows where to go. So it's really just everyone sticking to their job, like we say every week, but especially this week.
Secondary's going to be tested. Chancellor James supposed to be back. Defensive line, I thought, was good against the run, had 5 sacks, did a good job, but it's going to be a little different kind of pressure.
Yeah.
Falk's going to be a guy that's going to throw it quickly. That's all. It's basically basketball and grass. The
yep.
quarterback's the point guard. He dishes to people. A lot of the passes, very, very short yardage, and then the receivers make moves after the catch.
Yeah, that's true. And he, you know, his big stat is the way he plays in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of comeback wins, although did not have one on Saturday.
No, he didn't.
He had 3 the year before. Last year when Washington State won 9 games, they went 9-4. Brett Rippon, we've talked about his uncle being Mark Rippon, one of the all-time great quarterbacks at Washington State. Rippon comes in off a very good performance, 22 of 33 for 347 against Louisiana. He was pleased to have a new toy to play with, and that's wide receiver Cedric Wilson, 7 catches, 113 yards. Here's what he says about said.
You know, just didn't hesitate and just played. You know, just trusted everything that we've been working on in practice. And, you know, when he gets his one-on-ones, we're going to take those shots. And, you know, he's a guy, like I said, that, you know, works hard. He's always in the film room trying to get better. And I think, you know, as an offense as a whole, we've done a lot better job of that. Guys preparing better. We're all on the same page, and that's got to continue.
I know that an emphasis.
I like Cedric Wilson. I think he gives you a different edge with 6'3", 183, something that really
he's
they didn't have last
year. He's going to make Spurbeck so much better. That's all I kept thinking. They can't concentrate on Spurbeck anymore.
No, they can't. And then hopefully Chaz Anderson, he only yep. had 1 catch, emerges back. They were really high on Akilian Butler. He didn't do a whole lot. It was basically the Spurbeck, Wilson, and McNichol show as far as guys catching the football. Brett Rippon, we talked about getting the ball out, only getting sacked once. He certainly did that. He also said looking off receivers was huge.
Yeah, you know, eye discipline has always been a big part of my, you know, game and, you know, trying to look guys off, and you know, obviously I've worked on that a lot over the offseason, you know, where I can get better with that. And you know, sometimes maybe you do have to look off a guy, or maybe sometimes you really don't, and you have to, you know, be able to get the ball out quickly and, you know, knowing situations where you're really going to have to use your eyes more than others. And you know, I felt like I've done a better job of that.
Yeah, he looks spectacular. He's taken a gigantic leap forward from last year. KBOI News Time, 8:51.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on the home of the Broncos, 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Paul Jay and Bob Beeler, Chris Walton here on Bronco Monday on a Tuesday. Washington State, I read through their whole press release, they don't mention the Eastern Washington
game. Want to forget it, I guess.
Yeah, they got
that
the score,
mojo.
But that's about it.
Well, I think 2 years in a row, again, they lost last year to Portland State. They ended up having a good season. maybe they just weren't ready to go week one. I think you're going to get a much tougher customer in week two. I think it's going to be an extremely high-scoring game. I think, you know, this is, Chris, you were talking about turnovers. This is one where I think some turnovers are going to help. If you get a plus two on the turnovers, it may be one of those things like a tennis match. I think the losing team has a shot to be better than 35 in this game.
Yeah. I think that's very true. And they lost 45-42 to Eastern Washington. We got a couple of coaches in from Eastern with the experience at Eastern Washington. Zach, of course, and
Zach Hill and Junior Adams, so the quarterback and receivers.
They will help us, I think, get ready for
the think so, too. And then Boise State gets a chance at a Pac-12 team. They opened the season strong. They were getting votes. I don't know if a win, even though it was decisive at Louisiana, will be enough to push you into the top 25. But I think a win over Washington State just might do it because enough other people would lose. Biggest win for the Mountain West this past week, Paul J. Wyoming in three overtimes beat Northern Illinois 40-34 in a rain lightning delayed game that didn't get over till 2:30 in the morning. And then the team that embarrassed the league was Colorado State.
Oh, that was terrible.
I thought they could beat Colorado. Not only did they not beat them, they lost 44-7.
Yeah, they did, and it was not just a loss; it was an embarrassment. I thought a lot of pretty good games this week. Wyoming at Nebraska. That's pretty good. Utah State at USC. Nevada at Notre Dame.
I think the one that I'm looking for most is Cal at San Diego State.
That'll be a good game.
Cal comes off a bye. They look good offensively against Hawaii. Defensively, they gave up 31 points. I think San Diego State gets it done. I think San Diego State is the better team than Cal, but to me, that game and the Boise State, Washington State game, they are on at the exact same time. I think if you know, look at the end of the day, if you can get two wins, both Mountain West teams are at home, two best teams against two teams that I would say would be middle of the pack in the Pac-12, the Mountain West needs to win those two games.
Yeah, and the other Pac-12 game, of course, UNLV at UCLA. I don't see much of a chance for UNLV.
I don't think Utah State goes to USC and wins, and I don't think UNLV goes to UCLA and wins. I don't think that's happening.
And you mentioned a lot of these teams that the Mountain West is playing this week all lost last week.
Yeah, USC, Notre Dame, UCLA, all losers.
Were you surprised
Washington
USC?
State?
I mean, I wasn't surprised they lost to Alabama. I picked Alabama. But that was shocking was the score. UCLA loses a tough one on the road to A&M. Could have won that.
Yep.
Notre Dame could have won the game at Texas. So,
one of the better games I've seen.
Oh, Notre absolutely. Dame, Texas. Absolutely.
But yeah, Southern Cal looked like Colorado State.
I thought USC was to the Pac-12 what Colorado State was to the Mountain West. It was embarrassing.
And by the way, Louisiana fired their defensive coordinator, Melvin Smith, after the game. Yeah, there has to be more to it than that.
Yeah, it has to be. I don't know what he said. You got to hold him under 40, son, or you're done. They fired him right after the game.
Wow.
That's amazing. That'll give you a good rep if every team you play fires their offensive coordinator.
Or defensive coordinator is the case. We've got Coach's Show Thursday night this week right here on 670 KBOI. Yep. I think it looks like we're going to have Cedric Wilson and Tanner Vallejo, I think, are supposed to be the guests.
Nice. Be interesting to hear from Cedric Wilson. What an impact teammate.
And we're going to have assistant coach as well, Andy Avalos, talk with him about a good performance at Louisiana. And he's the guy that's going to be on the spot. His defense is going to have to come through and with enough stops against Washington State.
Yeah. Any stop against a team that scores like that and has that kind of an offense is a big one. All right, Bob, looking forward to Thursday night and the coaches show. And then, of course, Saturday, our game day coverage begins at 3, kickoff at 8:15. It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live, coming up after a news break. At the top of the hour, we'll see you then.
If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses, just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, top of the morning. We are back. Thanks to Bob Beeler and us, too, for the Bronco Monday on Tuesday segment. Bronco Tuesday will be on Wednesday.
We're still here, so thanks
to Bob.
You're
keeping score. Mm-hmm. Smaller houses.
Yeah. There's a downsizing trend taking hold when it comes to real estate. Interestingly, now, we've thought about downsizing at some point. We only have one, you know, more kid to go.
Right. And you got him for, what, 2-3 years?
Well, yeah, probably. He's probably going to go to Boise State. So maybe 2 or 3 years more. Well, yeah, all those things are possible.
Yeah.
But we were talking about downsizing. But the thing is, we already are at 1,100 square feet.
That's all you got?
So if we downsize, we'd probably go into a condo or something.
You know, when Tam and I were first married, my son Scott lived with us, and we lived in a 720-square-foot apartment.
How'd that work out for you?
It was tight. Yeah. I mean, you know, the kitchen looked like, I don't know, it was really small. It was like a third the size of most kitchens.
Right.
Had all the stuff, though, so it was all right.
But the people who are most often talking about downsizing are those who have purchased homes that range somewhere between 3 and 5,000 square feet.
Yep.
According to industry.
Gotta heat that there and pay taxes on.
Oh, absolutely. Well, plus, you know, if they have a second floor, there comes a time in your life when a second floor isn't that convenient. According to industry insiders, gone are the days when home buyers are seeking oversized, mass-produced, single-family homes. They're the ones that, with apologies to McDonald's, we called McMansions.
Yep.
Specifically.
Yeah, they are baby mansions.
Yeah. Yep. J.P. Piccinini, a real estate broker and owner of J.P. and Associate Realtors in Dallas-Fort Worth, said the trend is growing because families don't want those large homes anymore, and builders have stopped building them as well, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, we went up to that Alta Vista Court, you know, the one that's sliding down the hill.
Yeah.
And there's like 7 or 8 big, huge McMansions, if you will, sitting up there just sliding away.
Yeah, that's too bad.
And we thought, wow, how devastating is that? And we went, look how big these houses are.
Yeah.
How many kids did they have? And I don't know. They could have had 5, 6 kids and needed that much space. But those things are huge.
Well, and the deal is too. I mean, if you can afford a lot of space, sometimes it's just fun to have a lot of space to walk around in.
Yeah, I mean,
but not to heat and not to clean, not to do all those things.
Pay taxes on. Yeah,
5,000. This is what Piccinini said. Mm-hmm. A 5,000-square-foot house was the norm. Now we are down to about 3,000 square feet.
It was the norm?
It was the norm for a while.
Wow.
A recent survey put together by Trulia.com shows home premiums on houses between 3 and 5,000 square feet continue to drop. Piccinini said the trend in North Texas is right on par with the national data collected by Trulia.
You want to buy a big house cheap? Do it in Texas.
Apparently.
As long as you're not in Austin.
Well, yeah. He added the traditional family has really learned to be more fiscally responsible. Another factor driving this trend, according to Piccinini, is the fact that large vacant lots on which to build are hard to find and they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
He said you probably have under a 3,000-square-foot home. That's really the hot bread and butter. He said those homes tend to be townhouses, condos, and smaller single-family houses.
Yeah.
I still don't think of 3,000 square feet as being that small. But then again, you know, like I said, we exist in 1,100 square feet right now, and it's and that's not terribly crowded either.
No, and what do you have in that size? 3 bedrooms, small bedrooms?
Yeah, 3 bedrooms.
Yeah,
couple of bathrooms.
Yeah, so you know, ours is I think 1,900 something, just under 2,000.
You've got different levels too.
Well, we got our TV rooms down. We're one floor, but. We got more room than we know what to do with. We got a couple of rooms that we seldom use.
Yeah.
You know, Natalie's bedroom, and somebody comes and visits, they can stay in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other room is where the treadmill is.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we even have one of those as well.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and how much do you need? I mean, that becomes a question.
But there have been a lot of stories. I mean, I saw the same story, or not the exact same story, but there was one in the Chicago Tribune recently that even said McMansions in it. It said the appeal of McMansions is shrinking nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story in Business Insider that said the American McMansion is dying for good. And Washington Post said as demographics change, McMansions don't look quite so appealing.
Yeah, well, Tam, Natalie has a friend who lived with her parents, with her sister and herself. So there were 4 of them in a 4,000-square-foot home.
Yeah, pretty good size.
And I went, you each have 1,000 square feet. Wow, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And then she moved away. Her sister moved away. And now mom and dad each have 2,000 square feet.
And in surveys taken among millennials, people born 1982 and after, they simply don't have this dream of having a giant, enormous house.
No.
They have a dream of living someplace exciting, but living in probably about the minimum space that they can get away with.
Yeah, my daughter Natalie wants to buy a house. She said the houses in Texas don't have garages. I went, what? She goes, yeah, you buy a house in Austin, it won't have a garage.
Do they have like a carport or do you park out back? Do they have alleys?
I don't know.
Hmm.
You got me? That's
good question.
Yeah, weird. At least in her price range. I'm going to put that out there.
Well, yeah, good point.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting how trends change over years. When I was a kid, there were a lot of big houses.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, but grandma and grandpa lived with you. You know, and maybe
Harry. Chances are grandma and grandpa used to be the sole proprietors of the home.
Yeah, they might have owned the home before you did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the kids had the basement and it.
And that's
everybody's. The families were still together.
Yeah, that was at a time when there weren't so many babysitting jobs. There weren't necessarily so many people that had to work outside the home. A lot of more people could stay home because you had more people to take care of kids.
Yeah. And you cooked your own stuff.
Well, there's that, too.
From scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. And you needed bigger things. Not so anymore in the scratch-and-sniff society. KBOI News Time, 914. House. How big is our house? How big a house do you need? Things are, we're downsizing. Everybody's downsizing. KBOI rewards code McMansion, McMansion. McMansion.
You know, something else that's kind of funny is a lot of people are watching those shows like Hoarders on TV, and they start to see themselves a little bit in that, you know, where... You just, anything anybody's ever given you, anything you could ever get for free, anything that you could buy on sale, you have, and then you just have it somewhere in your house, and it sits there and collects dust.
Yeah.
And people are starting to say, why did I buy this in the first place?
Yeah, we got two rooms full of junk.
How many of this stuff, you know, how many of these things have I not used in a whole year?
Yeah. If you haven't used it in a year, get rid of it. It's like people who have lived in a motorhome, like I have, you know, I take trips in it.
Right.
Or on a boat. You know, you take only what you need.
Yeah.
Only what you need. You don't take 9 sports coats and 15 pairs of shoes. And I mean, and really in life, day-to-day life, you do the same
thing. Well, and people who used to collect a lot of things and have big collections on those shows where they clean
teaspoons.
On those hoarder shows where they clean up their house. A lot of times they'll say, okay, I notice you have a collection here and you have 800 items in your collection. Why don't you pick out your 20 favorite, make a display, and then sell the rest?
Yeah.
And they usually end up thinking about that for quite some time, but most of them end up doing it.
Yeah. Let's go to Dan of Eagle. Dan, you're on 670 KBOI. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just watched a hot air balloon land at Hill Road and 55. It was kind of neat to see, and all the kids from the school came out and watched it. So I was listening to your segment. I used to live in the Plano Frisco area, North Dallas.
Right.
And I'm witness to those 55-square-foot McMansions. And my wife and I used to walk our dogs around and just kind of laugh. There are 0 yards.
It's
about a 5-foot yard around all of them. They are mortgaged to the hill, I would believe. They have an Audi and they have a BMW. But what's funny is they have no furnishings. They have these nice houses that are really great and look good, and they go tell their friends and whatnot, but they are way in debt, and some of my friends have owned them. And another interesting aspect is those are really, the people that are buying them are Asian and Indian. There's a big population of that in the North Dallas area, software engineers.
Well, they have several generations living with them, right?
No.
No?
I didn't speak to that. I'm not sure about that, but
they just have international money.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned the no furniture. I hadn't really thought about that. But if you buy a big, brand-new house, you know, you might think, well, geez, our old furniture won't look good in this house. We'll have to buy all new furniture as soon as we can afford to get some. And also, you know, you pointed out that they have no yards. Yeah, it's one of those deals where they build so many houses on a small area, you know, and it used to be where they have room for 10 houses. Now they try to put 12. And so it's a deal where your neighbor sneezes and you say Gesundheit.
Yeah.
Right. All right. You're spending a lot of money for this $5,500 McMansion with no acreage, and you're right next to your neighbor, just like you said,
You can hear your neighbor snore. Dan, thanks for the call. There was a sales girl who lived here, lived in a big, beautiful house up in the hills, and I remember one time I said, man, you got a maid, and she was driving like a Range Rover.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, we got a maid. We got a great big new house with a great big mortgage. We've got two great big new cars with great big payments, and we can't afford to go to McDonald's. It's basically what she said.
Yeah.
All right, if you know the KBOI play of the game, give us a call. KBOI play of the game, 336-3711, 336-3711, win a $50 gift certificate from Lock, Stock, and Barrel. All right, we have someone on the line. We have Roger on the line. Roger, you're on 670 KBOI. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
What was the play of the game?
That was that double play where ripping to Spurbeck to McNichols for a score for 21-0.
All right, let's see if you're right.
I'm going to take the final play of their third drive, the double pass. Ripping to Spurbeck down to McNichols, 48-yard touchdown. Gave the Broncos a 21-0 lead.
Real food for real people. It's the Deli George motto. For the past 20 years, the locally owned mom-and-pop sandwich shop has been serving fresh, high-quality ingredients. Real food means bread from...
Okay, we're back.
All right, that is correct, Roger. You have got the play of the game, and you have won a $50 gift certificate from Lock, Stock, and Barrel. Thank you very much. You betcha. All right. Thanks. We'll get your stuff. All right.
Thank you.
You bet.
Our news is coming up.
All right. Talking about the downsizing of America this morning, from McMansions to townhouses. Let's go to Kevin Jones. Kevin, thanks for hanging on.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I've actually done a little bit of research into housing size as part of economic theory called the utility function. I have some numbers here I thought you might find interesting.
All right.
1973, the average size of a single-family house was 1,660 square feet. 2010, that number was 2,392 square feet. During that same time, average household size decreased from 3.01 to 2.54, which means that basically occupants were utilizing 941 square foot of a house versus 552 square feet in 73, which you refer to extrapolate those numbers forward. Really, the only size house that we need based upon 73 numbers is just over 1,400 square feet.
And you got to, I think ours is 1,900. You have to pay taxes on that extra square footage. You have to heat it. You have to cool it.
Clean it.
Yeah, exactly. All of that. Well, do you think we're finally getting the message with these 5,000 square foot homes going away?
I think we're probably getting the message. And the one thing is part of the reason I did that was trying to assign, you know, how do you assign the value between the utility of a house versus what you actually pay for it? And the thing is that eventually people are going to have to sell their houses to realize the value out of those houses. And to the extent that the subsequent buyers don't assign that same sort of value to that excess square footage,
right?
I think that there's, you know, that asset right there is at risk. And so, you know, and if we look at, you know, you had that conversation about the percentage or number of people that are living at home, which I had called in about the previous peak was 1938.
Wow.
Is that, you know, basically, if you look at it, we're starting to see a move that I think may continue for 20 or 25 years, more of a generational move into smaller houses.
Yeah. It's for slightly different reasons, though. In 1938, you know, nobody had any money, so it was much more economical to just stay with your family.
Well, I don't know. We've been talking about student loan debt and things like that, so I don't know that necessarily, you know, the average millennial is financially any better off. And if you look at that period back during that time, coming out of the Depression, and then the Federal Reserve raised rates in the late 30s and hurt things again, you know, that period is much like what we came out of 2008, 2009. And so I don't know. I would argue that maybe the reasons that kids are staying longer at home now might very well be for the same reasons we saw in 38.
Yeah, that's true. Now, what's going to happen to these 6,000-7,000 square foot homes, a really big one? Are people going to commune up in them? Two families in one house?
Well, you know, all I can say from an economic perspective is that the bid side for that house is probably going to deteriorate over the next 20 years.
Yeah,
either that or throw it on Airbnb.
Yeah. There you go. It's not a bad thing. All right, Kevin, thanks for the call.
You remember the stat we had a few weeks ago that was, in particular, it talked about Yale University. It just picked, right. It picked one of the better universities. And said that in 1971, when
this blows my mind.
Well, yeah, the minimum wage back then was a dollar and something, maybe $1.25 an hour. And it, in order to pay the tuition at Yale University for a year, you would have to work 14 to 17 hours a week at minimum wage.
Right.
And you could
pay for your college.
Yeah. Now the tuition is considerably higher at Yale University, but the minimum wage also is about seven times what it was, six times maybe, and now you would have to work somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 hours a week just to pay your tuition at minimum wage. So really, if you're working a minimum wage job trying to put yourself through college, yeah, you're going to finish in debt.
Well, yeah, especially through Yale. That's probably going to get you.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and I told you when I was in college, the semester cost, I went to the University of Idaho, was $740.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice now, yeah.
And now you can add.
But the fact is,
a zero to that at least.
If college education
at a state school
were still that inexpensive, our wages would probably be considerably lower as well.
Yeah, that's true. And my daughter went to a private school in Portland, mm-hmm. and you know, there's no way I could have afforded to do that. On the money I was making back then.
Good point.
But the thing is, she is making now. See, I came to Boise for, she's making five times what I was making when mm-hmm. I came to Boise, graduated. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You pay more. She's not in debt, thank God. You make more, though. I mean, inflation just carries everything.
Yeah, and this was the first time I ever heard much about inflation. I was a little kid, and I read a story about Mickey Mantle. And somebody had asked him, they said, do you resent the fact? And at that time, I think Pete Rose had just hit the $100,000 mark.
Yeah.
You know, and they're making millions now, even for not even being very good players. But Pete Rose had just hit the $100,000 mark, and a lot more players were making, you know, fairly good money. And somebody asked Mickey Mantle if he resented that. And he says, you know, because since he didn't make nearly that much money back in the 50s, he says, well, you got to remember, he says, back then, a Cadillac was $5,000.
Exactly. And you could buy a pretty nice home for $9,000, $10,000.
Yeah.
It blows your mind nowadays. If I had the money I have now and I was living in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't talk to you.
and rightly so.
KBOI News Time. 9:42.
Back now to Paul Jay and Chris.
Trailer for sailor rent, rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but
song written here in Boise by Roger Miller.
Indeed.
Indeed. Talking about inflation and...
Yeah, an 8x12 room.
Yeah, 8x12 four-bit room. So we're talking about downsizing. One of the things...
Okay, go ahead.
Retirement homes. Mm-hmm. You know, people who can afford to buy 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 square foot homes. The latest thing is they're called Colder condos.
Okay.
And they're in Florida, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, North Palm Beach. Units range now from 1,800 square feet to 2,400 square feet.
Still a pretty good sized condo.
Yeah. And are priced from 900,000 to 1.5 million. Penthouses are 3 million. And what they do, what they are, is skyscrapers. I mean, they're skyscrapers. They're like 40, 50 stories tall.
Oh, yeah, so your condo could be up on the 19th floor.
Or your penthouse on the 45th or whatever.
On the very top floor, yeah.
And the people are buying them because, you know, no yards, no this, no that. And and they have, you know, shops on the first two floors, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like your own little enclosed city.
Bill of Boise says that guy was right about the lack of furnishings. I have seen numbers of these big houses with only one room full of nice furniture. Then there are five empty bedroom bonus rooms with nothing in them. They should at least fill them with empty cardboard boxes. It will save on the heating and cooling bills.
That's true.
Yeah, that was. We had a general manager at a radio station where I was working. I'm going to say this is in the early 90s, probably 91, 92, 93. And he had a very nice, large house, but their living room didn't have anything in it. I mean, he had people over for kind of a housewarming, and
there was no furniture.
No, he didn't have any furniture in his living room. They had a nice family room, and they had had all the furniture they had moved from the previous house. But apparently, they'd lived in a smaller house previously, and even though they'd been there, you know, a month or 6 weeks or whatever, hadn't bought any new furniture for the living room yet.
Yeah, we. When we first moved to Boise, I had a friend who was in TV, which didn't pay snot in those days. And we went over to this guy's new house, and he had lawn furniture in the front room.
Yeah.
Folding chairs, picnic tables, card tables. And that was his – and his, well, his big thing he watched TV in was one of those – lounge chairs from the patio.
It's like when you're either, you know, just getting out of college or getting your first apartment or
something.
You only
got so much money.
It's decorated in a style called early garage sale.
Yeah. I can remember going to the Boise Main Auction. Furnished a couple of rooms out of that thing.
That's a good idea, too.
Oh, yeah. So people don't have money. You know, and if you don't have money, you can't buy houses. Now, a lot of people simply aren't buying houses.
Well, true.
But paying rent
makes a lot of
no sense.
There are a lot of professions now where you're not really, I'm not going to say you've ever been guaranteed to, you know, be able to stay 30 years at one job. Nobody ever has that guarantee.
No.
You and I have kind of done it, but we're rarities around radio.
It's true.
And the thing is, though, a lot of the computer type jobs and jobs that you can do almost anywhere don't have you staying in just one place to work for one company for long periods of time. And companies, you know, routinely, you know, if they're publicly traded, they routinely, you know, have to lay off 300-400 people. And if you have the right kind of job, you can ease right into another job just about anywhere. But a lot of the people, like millennials, for instance, again, those born after 1981, so in 1982 to the present, they are growing up in a world where, you know, you don't really have any company loyalty simply because the company has no loyalty to any of its workers.
Yeah.
This weekend, there was a big celebration because it was Labor Day. There was a big celebration of labor unions that was in Municipal Park. And I saw a picture, you know, Dave Beter was there. Mm-hmm. But in Idaho, unions have less power, considerably less power than they did before the right to work bill.
Yeah. And my daughter is ticked off. She's been in Austin now for a year. She's had her current job for 8 months, and she is peaked because she's having to rent. And then later she'll talk about it's too damn hot in Austin. She doesn't know if she's going to stay there, this and this and this. But she wants to buy a house so she's not throwing away her money, which you do when you're renting. You're just giving your money away.
Yeah, no equity.
But, you know, you have to have A, money for a down payment, all this stuff
right.
to buy a house. And then if you don't know if you're going to stay in a place, can't really do that. I mean, you can't really buy a house. So I'm, and she's kind of trapped. She doesn't know what to do. And I'm saying, hey, when I was your age, I was collecting baseball cards.
Dave of Boise says, it's funny, years ago when things were booming and all was great, I flat out said that it can't last and there will be giant houses, McMansions,
yep.
sitting empty and things yep. will go back to the way it was for our parents and grandparents.
It's going to happen to these places.
People will have to live with their extended families under the same roof. You guys and all your listeners laughed and said that would never happen. We did? I don't remember that. Anyway, well, here we are.
House guy forever.
Just like I said way back then, I am no psychic. Anybody with a pair of eyeballs could see it coming.
See, I just wonder what, and he does have a solution there. Multi-generational living in those big McMansions,
mm-hmm.
Which basically is going back to yeah. the 30s, like you said.
Well, and even calling them McMansions, 40s. it's kind of a cut to McDonald's. You know, saying that every hamburger they make is exactly the same. Well, you know, that's kind of why they've been successful.
Exactly.
Because they, you know, you can expect the same, you know, the same flavor, the same quality all over the country, you know, within the same place.
Yeah.
But McMansions just meant that the one next door looks just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge house, costs way too much money, and you don't get to have the amenities that a house used to. Like, there are no big wraparound porches on most of them anymore. There are no backyards, no big front yards.
Yeah. Del Webb kind of started all of that in the late 50s. In the Phoenix area with mm-hmm. Sun City and Sun City West and right. all of that. And he had these massive towns that he built.
Mm-hmm.
And they had homes that were single level, probably 2,500 square feet,
mm-hmm.
nicely furnished, you know, nice appointments, well, porches, and all that.
And
nice stuff.
Single level was the smartest thing in the world he could possibly do.
Older people.
Because if you've got older people retiring to Arizona, yeah. you know, they don't want to climb stairs that often.
And you had to be 55 to move into right. the
gated communities. Yeah.
Community. And they're still down there, and those homes are still going.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Sun City this and Sun City that. And, you know, Del Webb made a lot of money and bought the Yankees and did all this stuff.
And, yeah, and you know, as well as I do, I mean, from going to Phoenix once in a while, that every year there will be an orchard or a piece of desert or something missing and a brand new community sitting on it.
And a strip mall.
That wasn't there last year.
Yeah. All right. That'll about do it. We are out of time for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow. Welcome back from vacation.
Thank you much.
Yeah. You look good and tan from your vacation in the south of France.
Yeah, this is actually tan for me.
In the south of Twin Falls.
Yeah.
Yeah. 9:55, something to think about with Mike Rogers coming up next, brought to you by Boise Church of Christ, where church is family. Check them out on the World Wide Web at boisechurch.org.
Now, something to think about with Mike Rogers.
Then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi once famously said we had to vote for Obamacare to find out what's in it. But with the Iran nuclear deal, we may never find out what's in it. The Obama White House and State Department says Iran has to do one thing, but side deals really show them able to do something else. One side deal allows them to keep more low-enriched uranium than the agreement allows, so long as it's in waste form. Another allows Iran to exceed its heavy water and hot cell caps, all potential nuclear weapon components. A third loophole has allowed Iran to go full speed ahead with its ballistic missile program. All of this while Iran has placed new Russian air defense systems over one of their underground nuclear facilities. The deal was supposed to render that as a harmless science center. At least once Obamacare was passed, we actually did get to find out what's in it. With the Iran deal, we may never know. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.